in the book of Isaiah, if you'd like to be turning there. And we began last time talking about the anointing spirit, and we spent our time last time talking about the anointing and the historical kings and the significance of the whole idea and concept of anointing when it came to the kings and what that anointing said, what their responsibilities and duties were, and just the whole idea that the expectations of the kings were so high that, you know, they weren't going to be able to do those and carry out those expectations on their own. They needed some help to do that, and that help would come in the form of God's Spirit, and that was the point of the anointing. This morning, we continue looking at the anointing spirit, but we're going to be looking at the anointing and the coming servant king. Okay, as we continue, so in other words, kind of building on what we talked about last time and looking at the anointing and the king, let's take a look at the anointing, the concept of the anointing and the coming servant king. There are three major texts that we are going to begin with this morning, all three in Isaiah, concerning prophecies that are in reference to the coming servant king. So I'd like to get a couple of people to read for us this morning as we start out. I need somebody to read Isaiah 11, 1 through 5. And get a volunteer. Okay, Beverly. Isaiah 42, 1 through 7. Okay. All right, Baron. And then Isaiah 61, 1 through 3. Okay, Cindy. All right, so let's take a look at these three texts. And while we're reading these, I want you to listen closely, look at it, and see if you can pick out some commonalities. In other words, some things that each one of these texts are mentioning and bringing forth, again, in this whole idea or concept of the coming servant king. So Isaiah 1 through 5. Beverly? 11, 1 through 5. Okay. 42 verses 1 through 7. Okay, and then Isaiah 61, 1 through 3.
Thank you.
Okay. What are you seeing here? What are some of the common themes or commonalities of these three texts that you see? Okay. We've got the Spirit of the Lord coming on there. So the role of the Spirit of God on the role in the one who is taking on this particular task is there, isn't it? Okay, what else do you see here? Okay, you're going to stand for truth and justice. You see also, don't you, each one of these texts has brought out this idea of either a servant or a king, this whole concept of the servant king, the one who is to come, and what is going to happen, what kinds of things are going to happen. This justice that you're talking about, Wes, is going to be a result of the opening the eyes of the blind and taking care of the poor and so forth. We also see God fulfilling His own mission or purpose through this particular coming one. Okay? Notice in each one of these texts we're reading, you know, God is telling us, this is what I'm going to do. This is what's going to happen as a result of this one who's going to come. Okay? So it really is all about God's purpose. God working His plan to make it come about. This coming servant king, in a sense, again, go back to what we talked about last week, the whole concept of the anointing of the kings. This coming servant king would, in a sense, be the anointed one par excellence. Okay, in other words, he's the epitome, so to speak. He's the greatest of the kings, those who have come and been anointed to lead God's people. This would be the greatest one in terms of the kings. But at the same time, he's also referred to as what? A servant. See? Normally, when we think about the kings, and even when we read through, go all the way back to the warning that God gave to the Israelite people when they demanded to have a king so they could be like all the other nations, what was the warning that was given to them? God said, I'll give you a king, but what? Yeah, here's what the king's going to require of you, you see? And it was, you know, a great deal that was required. He's going to take your daughters and your sons. He's going to take your land. He's going to take your animals. He's, you know, all these things to be able to take care of the king. So when we read about the kings, and even especially as you're reading about the practices of the kings, how much of a servant concept do you get from those kings? Not much. Not much at all. See? But hear this. Coming servant king. Okay? He would be the one who was anointed in the same way as a king, okay, and have the same responsibilities as a king, right? But at the same time, he would also have the humility of a servant. Okay? So you're combining both of those in this one who is to come. The humility and gentleness of a servant he would have, as well as the presence and the power of a king through his anointing by God's Spirit. Okay? So let's take a look at this anointing of the servant king in view of the mission. Okay, the mission of the following three things here. Okay, the first is the mission of God, the second is the mission of Israel, and the third is the mission of the servant king. Now, in our previous study, when we were looking at getting to know Jesus through the Old Testament, we talk a lot about this mission of God and the mission of Israel. So some of this should be very familiar to most of you. Those of you who were not here when we were doing that study, hopefully it will help you to look at and understand this concept a little bit better. We go back and, first of all, let's take a look at the mission of God. Okay? What is the mission of God really all about, and where do we find the foundation really thereof concerning the mission of God? Anybody recall? What? Right. But where do we find that? Where's the concept really begin? Where is it? Where's the foundation of it, so to speak? Okay. We find the first mention in Genesis 3 and verse 15, indicating that God is going to and has a plan to redeem man. But really, it's best understood in God's promise to Abraham, isn't it? As we've talked about before. Go to Genesis chapter 12 and remember and look at, renew this promise that God made to Abraham, and what is that promise really all about? Okay, there are several different aspects of this promise. Somebody turn there, Genesis chapter 12. And let's see. Let's read. I think it's the first six verses. First five. First three, actually. Who's got that? Who wants to read that for us this morning? All right, Mike, go ahead.
What was the verse again?
Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3.
Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed."
Okay, so what are the provisions of this promise? First of all, God is going to do what with Abraham? Do what now? Okay, he's going to, first of all, what does he say here? First of all, I'm going to make you into a great nation, okay? He's going to bring you to a new land. I'm going to make you into a great nation, and I'm going to do what with your name? I'm going to make your name great, okay? All right? And I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And what's going to happen? Through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. Okay? Now, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on, you know, that last aspect of the promise. But keep in mind, that's not the only important part of the promise. Okay? God said, look, Abraham, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pack your stuff, okay, and I want you to leave. And I'm going to take you to a land that I'm going to give you. All right? And in the process of all of this, here's what I'm going to do for you. In other words, it's a two-part thing, isn't it? That God is saying to Abraham, Abraham, here's what I want you to do. I want you to have enough faith in me that you will pack your stuff and go where I tell you to go. So that's Abraham's part, right? And then there's God's part. And God says, Abraham, when you do this, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to turn you into a great nation. I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to watch over you. So anybody that curses you, they're going to have to deal with me. Okay? And anybody that blesses you, they're going to receive a blessing for doing so. And all nations of the earth are going to be blessed through you. Okay? So Abraham did his part, packed up his stuff, and he went. Where'd he go? He didn't know, right? To begin with, he just went. That's what the faith is all about. And that's what the writer of Hebrews talks about, doesn't he? You see, not even knowing where he was going to go. But he obeyed God. See? And God fulfilled his promise to him. He made him into a great nation. Right? When did that occur? Okay. Well, it was through Jacob. It was through all these descendants. But when did the nation really become a nation? In Egypt. When they entered into Egypt, they were just simply what? They were a family. You say? 72, I think. Somebody check me on that. Okay. When they left Egypt, what were they? They were a nation. Something like 400,000? I'd say that's a pretty good-sized nation, wouldn't you? You see? And they also, by that time, you see, you just see God's hand working through all of these things, because through this family that entered into the land of Egypt, was divided up by the 12 sons, see, became the 12 tribes of Israel, right? So they became a nation while they were there in captivity. We know it happened there because when they left Egypt, what were some of the instructions that God gave to Moses? They were instructed to leave, gather their things, and they left. Didn't they? By their families and clans and so forth. You see? They were a nation of people. And through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. The world, by that time, had become so corrupted and evil, even after the flood, okay? Right? Had become so corrupted and evil that it is, in the sense, characterized by the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay? So, in other words, the story that we read about there about Sodom and Gomorrah, when God comes and, you know, he tells Abraham what he's about to do and so forth, that's not just simply a story that God threw into the Bible to condemn homosexuality. Okay? That's a story there to help us to understand the things that were set up, the things that were in place at that time that says, okay, God's moving here to really put his plan into motion. Okay? Why? And I think the emphasis that story really tells us, it should tell us anyway, is, again, what is the purpose of this nation? Okay? Why did God need to do this to begin with? Because the world had become so corrupted. You see, again, it's not just about homosexuality, okay? It's about the corruption of humanity. That God is moving with his plan, and that plan was to redeem mankind, humanity. You see. So we see those kinds of stories that the Old Testament is telling us about, how God is working to bring about what his mission was really all about. That is, to reconcile his creation to himself. How much of his creation? All of it. Not just one particular part of it. In other words, God had called Abraham in order that his, that is, God's mission of redemption would begin. Okay? So he created this nation out of this one man, as he promised that he would do. And that brings us then to the mission of that nation. Okay? What was the mission of Israel? Okay? In other words, we need to understand that the nation of Israel was formed from Abraham's seed for God's purposes. Okay? And you have to keep that in mind, and you've got to understand that aspect of the nation of Israel first. Because if you lose sight of that, then you lose sight of what they as a nation were really all about. And unfortunately, the Israelites as a nation lost sight of that, you see. And so they lost sight of their mission. When they lost sight of their purpose, you see, God's purpose for them, they lost sight of the mission. And we have to keep that in mind if we're to truly understand what this is really all about. In other words, the Israelites were not formed as a nation. They were not chosen for unique and special privilege for themselves alone. When God made the promise to Abraham that he would make him into a great nation, it was not just simply that God was going to, because, you know, God just loved Abraham so much, he said, I'm going to make you into a great nation, and they're just going to be able to enjoy all the beauty and splendor of my world, and I'm going to watch over them and bless them and so on and so forth. No. God made Abraham into a great nation for the purpose, or for his purpose, of reconciling his creation to himself. That was the purpose of this nation. See? It was never intended by God to set them up as a special group or a special nation unto themselves, exclusive from the rest of the world. They were chosen, in other words, for a unique responsibility in fulfilling God's mission and purpose. That's why God chose these people and created them into, or made them into, a nation, was so that they would be the ones who would have the responsibility of working through God's intended purpose. Okay, so their mission, that is the mission of Israel, was to fulfill God's mission. All right? Any thoughts or comments on that thus far? I'm sorry? Yes, and we're coming to that, but even more than just simply an example. But indeed, they were to be the light for the Gentiles, right? You see? But we read about when Jesus comes along, and we're going to look at this even more detail as we go along through this study. Jesus comes along. And what are the prophecies concerning him, that is, this servant king that is coming? We already read some from Isaiah that told us he was going to do what? Do what? Yeah, and he's going to be a light to the Gentiles, right? In other words, that the Israelites as a nation were intended to accomplish, he was going to fulfill. See? So the Israelites then as a nation would be the instrument by which God would fulfill this promise that he made to Abraham. All right? Israel was formed and chosen not against all the other nations that existed in the world, but rather for the sake of all those other nations. Does that make sense? You see? Part of the problem with the Israelites was is that they looked at that just the opposite, didn't they? They looked at themselves as that they were chosen because they were special. You see? And they were chosen because they were better than all the other nations. When instead, God's design and God's plan was no, they were chosen as that light for all the other nations. They were to be, look in Exodus 19, verses 4 through 6. Let me get somebody to read that text for us. Whoever gets there. Exodus 19, verses 4 through 6. You got it, Peggy? Okay.
You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak.
Okay. Although the whole earth is mine, you are to be what? Come on, don't mumble. What is it? Say it boldly. A treasured possession. And what else? A kingdom of priests or a nation of priests and a what else? A holy nation. So they're going to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Okay? Now go back and consider, and you go and you look at and you read through all these laws that God had given Moses to the Israelite people, and what we begin to find that this nation of Israel as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation were to be, yes, Wes, an example, but even more of an example. Think about the role of the priests for the Israelites themselves. The work of the priests and the role of the priest, what was it, basically? Okay, they offered sacrifices to who? To God on behalf of the people. Thank you. So in that sense, did they not stand in a position between the people and God? You see? Because the people weren't allowed to go freely of themselves and offer the sacrifices and so forth. Right? They had to have this go-between them, and that's the role of the priest, basically. I mean, there's a lot of functions in there, but that's basically the role of the priest. And the admonition was that they were to do what, Peggy? The first part of what you read was to obey his commands, right? And by obeying his commands, they would be that holy nation. Because when you obey God's commands, you keep yourself from the sin and stain of the world, and you keep yourself holy or set apart to God. But here in Exodus 19, God is not just simply talking about the role of the priests, but he's talking about Israel as their role as a nation, that they, as a nation, are to be a kingdom or a nation of priests, you say. So what would their role then be? They would be the ones who, just like the priest was for Israel, they would be the ones who would stand between God and the rest of the nations, you say, as the example, as the light, you say, as the nation that was holy, that would call the other nations to join them in that holiness before God. Keith?
But God made them that way.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. It wasn't because they were so great at all, you see. Again, it was all because of God's choosing, right? Yeah. But you see, when we look at this idea of choosing, it wasn't like God said, okay, let me look at all the nations around and let's see which one I can find that's the best out of, you know, what I got to work with here. He made this nation out of one man, you see? And he made this nation with that intent. When he made that promise to Abraham way, way back before, that was his intention. See? And we need to understand that, because these things that happened were not things that were kind of arbitrary, and they weren't last-minute thoughts. They weren't, oh, gee, I didn't see that coming, let me try and do this instead. It was all part of God's mission that he set in motion when he called Abraham out of the Ur of the Chaldees. See? And began that work that he had intended, that was to reconcile himself to all of his creation. And that was the mission of the Israelites as a nation. They would stand between God and the nations, not to be an obstacle as they had come about to be by Jesus' time, but God's intention for them was to be a light to the Gentiles. So we see this, you know, by Jesus' day, the attitude of the Israelites towards Gentiles was what? What? Yeah, it was disgust. It's like, we don't have nothing to do with these people. Why? Because they're lost and we're not. Because we're privileged, you see. So they had completely lost sight of the promise that God gave to Abraham and the mission that he gave to them as a people, as a nation, to be a nation of priests, you see, to be that go-between between God and the rest of the nation, the rest of the world. But through all of that, the one part of the promise that they did remember was what? Anybody recall? What's the one part of the promise God made to Abraham that the people did really remember, so to speak? Okay, they were blessed. Yeah, they remembered that. They remembered all of them in a sense. But mostly it seems that they remembered that God was going to make Abraham's name great. See? Because they continued to invoke the name of Abraham constantly, didn't they? Our father Abraham said this. Our father Abraham did this. They were always referring. And I've said this before, that you know, when you read through the Old Testament and you look at the New Testament in terms of the times that where Jesus was there, there are three names that are kind of like the E.F. Hutton, okay, of Bible history time. When you mention any of those three names, everybody's kind of going to stop and listen to what you got to say. Okay? And those three names were who? Moses, who was what?
Lawgiver.
The Moses, the lawgiver. David, the king. And Abraham, who is our father. You see? They were constantly mentioning those three, bringing them up. Abraham is our father. Okay. In a sense, if you think about it, what they were really doing was bringing an indictment upon themselves, saying that they knew of the promises that God made to Abraham, but they weren't following through. See, you remember this part of the promise. You got to hold on to all of the promise, not just the parts you want to remember. and God promised Abraham through you all nations of the earth would be blessed. They dropped that part of the promise, didn't they? See? So therefore, in that, they had failed in their mission. Okay? They had failed in their mission. And so, then finally, last couple of minutes we have here, let's talk about the mission of God's servant. Okay, this servant king that we've been focusing on. And that mission was really a twofold mission. There were two things that as we read through the various texts that we find about this servant king and what he was to accomplish and do. The first was a mission to Israel. Okay, that is to restore Israel to God because they had fallen so far away from God. So part of his mission was to restore Israel to God. And the second part was the mission of Israel. Okay? That is bringing God's redemption to all the nations. So this servant king, his mission was to accomplish those things. It was a mission to Israel to restore them to God, and a mission of Israel, that is, to complete the follow through with what the mission of Israel was to begin with. Okay? Isaiah 42, verses 1 through 7, give four aspects of the mission. The one on whom he put his spirit, verse 1 says, and I want to encourage you to go and read that. If you want to turn there, and I'm going to kind of walk you through these things as we finish up here because we're just about out of time. Isaiah 42, verses 1 through 7. Four aspects of the mission of this servant king. The first one is justice, verses 1, 3, and 4. The second is compassion, verses 2 and 3. The third is enlightenment, verses 6 and 7. And the fourth is liberation, verse 7. Okay, I'll give you those and just encourage you to take a few minutes with the text we read earlier, but I want to encourage you to go back and read it again and looking at those verses in that way for those four specific aspects of the mission of this servant. Next week, we will continue in this kind of same thought that we're going on, but it's really going to be focusing on specifically the anointing and the mission of Jesus Christ. Okay? So that's where we're going to go with this. Thank you all very much.